Okay, today is September 29th. What is it? Wednesday. Beautiful day outside, and it's a little after 3 in the afternoon. And my name is Michael Klein. Carrie Klein is here with me today. And would you please say my name is?
Sure. My name is J.T. Hsu.
Okay. And tell us your date of birth.
June the 12th, 1945.
Well, maybe you'd start off and tell us about your people, who your people were, and and where you were raised, where you grew up.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, you know, I basically came here as an immigrant, and I was born in China, 1945, and then I was I moved to Taiwan at 3. Basically to escape from the civil war. Okay, and at the time there was a, you know, communist China and nationalist China fighting pretty bad. So, and I was raised in Taiwan for 20 years until graduating from the college. Then I moved over here and went to graduate schools and earned some degrees there, and I started my career here.
What did you study?
I studied double E to begin with.
What is it?
Electrical engineering, in short, double E. And then when I came here, I went to University of Houston for systems engineering. Then after that, I went to Purdue to resume my double E. And then I started to become the first generation computer people, you know, software developer.
So you're a pioneer in software development?
Yes, kind of, yeah. At that time, you know, computer ages was dawning. So it's very fun to join this. And that, you know, this opportunity probably only existed in U.S. at that time. So it's very much, it's my privilege.
Yeah. So tell me how you came to be in Concord then. What was your path?
Sure,
Concord?
Yeah, my migration path. Yes, so first, okay, when I graduated from Purdue University in Indiana, my first job, I went to Dayton, Ohio, for NCR company. You know, NCR is the company which does 90% of the cash registers at that time.
National cash register.
National cash register company, that's called NCR. And they had the market share of 97%. They were dominated, more than IBM and digital equipment and anything like that. And at that time they were, they realized the new age came, that they need to switch to computer-based cash register. So they started, and then I was fortunately one of the people, you know, young people to hire for that purpose. Then I witnessed massive layoff because of this technology change, which in a way that I realized, you know, realize what the real world is very quickly that way.
What do you mean?
Because the technology changes and all the mechanical cash register that they did before got to go. They lost the competition edge, things like that, and they need a new computer people to build a new generation of cash registers. And with that background, I was hired to do that. Then again, every Friday, I just, as far as I can remember, almost every Friday I was there. I saw my people, my colleagues around me, the older generations get laid off. They got pink slips every Friday. You know, bunch by bunch, just life.
And where was this going on?
This was in Dayton, Ohio. Right, where the NCR headquarters is. And then after that, I went to a small telephone company called Stromberg Carlson, which is a subsidiary of General Dynamics. And that was in Florida for half a year. Then I got married. Then I moved to Schenectady, New York, which is for GE Research Center job. No. So, and I was there for four years. Then I eventually moved to this area in the greater Boston area, where basically, you know, this area has all five big mini computer companies in the world. Then as a computer person, it's like eventually, you know, you come to the mecca of this computer.
There are five big computer companies?
Right.
Which are those?
Okay, if I remember correctly, okay, Digital Equipment, Data General, Hewlett Packard, Prime Computer. I think there's another one. I don't remember now. Yeah.
So you came to the Mecca?
Basically, yes. Yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's like my destiny. So after all these jobs, eventually I settled down here for 30 years. Since 1980.
And who did you work for?
First job was for Prime Computer in Framingham, Massachusetts. And this actually decided, my wife worked for MIT Research Company.
MIT
Research, no, in short. The official name is MITRE. That stands for MIT Research. So in Billerica area. So we kind of chose Concord as a midpoint for commute. So she and I basically drove like within 20 minutes for our work, which is pretty nice. That's how I settled here in Concord.
In what year was that?
That was 1980. Yeah. And since then, I live in Concord and never moved. Even still live in the same house, you know, as I moved in. I enjoy being here.
Where do you live?
I live in West Concord right now. That's the address, Old Picard Road, 304 Old Picard Road.
In West Concord?
In West Concord, you know, 10 minutes away from here.
And you like it?
I love it. No, and I raised my family here. I have three children. Now they're all grown ups. And every time we talked about this this period of time, they appreciate it very much too. They said, "Oh, you know, we love to. You know, this is a nice town to grow up in." Mm-hmm. So nothing but good memory.
Is your wife Chinese as well?
Yes. We met in Purdue University. She has the same background as I have. We all came from Taiwan. She was born in Taiwan and raised in Taiwan, basically. But we all have Chinese background, you know, so we all, it's easy to understand, you know, things like that. And we got married in 1976.
And she had a computer background too?
Most in other area, in artificial intelligence, in image processing area. That's what she's doing right now. You know, research work for Lincoln Lab.
For Lincoln?
Lincoln Lab, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lab associated with MIT.
Mm-hmm. Well, as an outsider, I might think of Concord as kind of a hard place to break into because mm-hmm. very old families here and, you know what I'm trying to say?
Yes, I understand that. In fact, I found that it's pretty pretty good town to for an alien, you know, to come in. It's a very, I would say, maybe a conservative town here in New England. You look around, you can see all the downtown, you know, buildings are still maintained for centuries, the same way as they originally had. Very little commercial are allowed to move in. That's why we still have a very quiet and, in a way, prestigious town in this area. But as one of the earliest, foreign families to come in, we never felt any, you know, feeling being rejected or whatever. Just, I think the town is just very, so nice to open to all people. And so the, like when we came in, it was only two or three families as I know of in Concord, you know, Chinese families. And so it's like a predominantly white, upscale suburb, you know, in the greater Boston area. And our kids also said that to me, that, you know, they don't usually find any classmates in their background at all.
They what?
They were not. They didn't, you know, couldn't find anybody else's in their backgrounds because they were so, everybody, most of them are just, white people, things like that, upscale. Living standard, things like that, and but they, you know, they still like it. I think we mingled well with the people here.
I'm trying to believe that.
I don't blame you.
I wish you'd tell me what really happened.
What really happened is just basically, you know, we don't feel any difference. We in our social life, as well as, you know, in every stage of our life, raising our family here. They were all basically born here. My first kid, my daughter, was born back in Schenectady, but she moved in with us only less than a year old. So basically, she along with two siblings, we were all basically, you know, they were all raised here. Went through elementary school, middle school, high school, and eventually college of their choice. But they did they did pretty good. And they never complained about being not accepted here.
Really?
Yes, they were. Everybody, you know, felt so... So good about this environment. So we join all kinds of activities here, you know.
Like
baseball when they were young. Or before that, they probably, you know, they did some kids' soccer. First thing they can learn, you know, chase a ball around. That's about it. And then all the other stages, they did. I can recall them, like in high school, they were so much into the extracurricular activities, such as the Model UN. You ever heard about that? That's pretty. I think it's pretty widespread. Activity like doing Model UN, Model United Nations. So they did all these things, you know, presentation, debating, such as like small United Nations, okay, among groups of their classmates, things like that. And my first two, they liked it very much. Every semester, they had a chance to travel to other colleges, such as Harvard and Georgetown, and to do the on the national level. Because of that, my daughter now is a lawyer. She loves to do that.
She's interested in international
law? No, she's her major is corporate law. With her international background, she studied 4 years of Chinese in Georgetown. She went to Georgetown. And so she, you know, she get a foreign language certificate, Chinese language certificate that way. So I think that's a pretty good achievement on her own, because she, when she was young, we sent her and all our kids also to Chinese language schools in this area, Greater Boston area. Every Sunday they went there for 2 hours, from 2 to 4.
Where is there a Chinese school like that?
It's everywhere. We have maybe dozens of those Chinese language schools almost in, you know, in every big town. Okay, here like Lexington, whatever. These people, these towns have a lot of, you know, a bigger Chinese population. Then we kind of voluntarily form language schools like that. So
is
our
kids. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Go
ahead. Is that true when you came?
Yes, pretty much so. When I first came, there were some, not as many language schools around, but now it's even more, dozens. We're talking about maybe 20, 30s, easily that way.
In the Boston.
In the Greater Boston area. You know, they can't, you know, that's the way we can pass our heritage as well as our, you know, languages, cultures to our kids. And they went there for 9 years. So ninth grade, put this way, based on just 2 hours per week, every Sunday, like I said.
But that enabled your daughter to keep up her Chinese language skills.
Correct, and my other kids too. And she was the one who questioned me before, way back, just why do I need to go to this school? What's this good about? Okay, what's practical, you know, about this thing? And then we can't. You know, it's hard for the kids to understand. But later on, she went. Like I said, she went to the college. And on her own, she picked up that language after realizing her, you know, her background, identity, all these things. So, I'm happy that she. That means she really know why she not, why now.
It's great.
It's an interesting story. Yeah.
What about at home? What talk about language at home?
Right, we speak. We still speak most of Mandarins in home, you know, Chinese language. But when usually that just happened to all immigrants' company. I mean, families. Kids, the first kid probably speak more mother language to their parents. But then the second and third kind of get washed away, because then the siblings talking with each other English language they learn here. So their proficiency level like goes down that way. But my daughter still speak very fluent Mandarin.
Your oldest daughter.
My oldest daughter, yeah. My only daughter, yes. My other two kids are not as good. You know, just like I said, you know, that's the trend it goes. But we try to insist on speaking mother languages before. But when kids grow up to a certain level, you know, it's hard to insist on that, because they are, it kind of like discouraging them to communicate with us easily because of their problem, you know, their deficiency speaking that language. So it's getting harder and harder. Now they come back and they all, you know, we all speak English to each other. So that's the way it goes.
Interesting.
Quite different, yeah. Different from probably people, you know, the native local people can think about it. You know. This kind of family background.
So you have a 30-year long perspective. You're still living in the same house, in the same neighborhood.
Same neighborhood, yes.
Tell me how West Concord has changed, especially with regard to more Chinese coming, the development of a Chinese or mm-hmm. a Chinese American community mm-hmm. here. How would you describe all that?
Okay, now before that, I'd like to expand a little bit from just West Concord to Concord area, because West Concord is really relatively smaller area. It's hard to single that out. In the Concord area, ever since from the 2 to 3 Chinese American families when I moved in, now we're talking about maybe close to 100. You know, that's we 12 years ago we realized the need of this community, our community life. Because we often came across each other without knowing, you know, the kids share the school, like high school, middle school, something like that. Families come in, sometimes we don't know. We say, hey, you know, this may be a Chinese family, but we don't even know them. So we have, and the new families come in looking for the same family with the same background, they couldn't find it. Now, it's a lack of some kind of structure there. So I and another one, we founded the Chinese community organization we call C4 in short, which stands for Concord Carlisle Chinese Club. Right. In order,
Concord
Carlisle Chinese Club, that's CCCC, that's in short, it's C4. No, it's not the dynamite. You don't think about it. But anyway, so in a way to facilitate our people's life here, sort of, you know, to get to know get to know people through this community, this club, and also to kind of to attract new members who just came in to this area need help, and so we think we can pass our experience here to them regarding that. So we did pretty well. We had a very close relationship with this library. So every year we held like a Chinese New Year celebration here in the children department, and with all kinds of programs related to Chinese culture, like some activities such as like a Chinese music instrument performance. We had that one. It's quite different, and it attracts a lot of people. Every time, it's a full house here.
Not just Chinese, but...
No. From outside, all the other, the local community. Not from Chinese, but we are the core part to promote this to them. So introduce Chinese culture, heritage, custom, and art craft, all these kind of things. To them, so that's how we do it. And for many years, we've been doing this.
Chinese music
also, and there was also kind of many children program. We do this kind of small art and craft things for the kids. They love it. Yeah, so all kinds of things like that. Doing Chinese firecracker, you know, of course it's a fake one, but it's not, but it looks just like that. You know, the kids love to do these hands-on things, and also introduce Chinese calligraphy. You know, writing their names, Chinese names, in brush, with brush. Upon that, so we designed the bookmark, Chinese bookmarks, with, you know, in the, for that year, the Chinese, you know Chinese go horoscope, you know, they have 12 years, you know, this year is the year of tiger. So every year, for example, is a tiger year, we did a Chinese bookmark with a tiger, Chinese pending. It's but it must have the animal that of that year.
Chinese pendant?
Chinese pendant. The bookmark has a Chinese paintings on it, the picture on it. But for that year, we look for an animal. That animal, the tiger of Chinese painting, put on it as a way to introduce this kind of, you know, custom to the local people. So that did pretty well, and we, you know, for the kids, they all love to have their Chinese name to put on it, and we made, you know, we like made up one for them every time like that. So that's one of the programs which is pretty popular. So that's how we did it.
So what is the structure of the 4C? Do you have an office somewhere? Do you have how do immigrant people find you?
Okay,
that's what they need.
Understand it? Yeah, good question. Really, since we started the C4 idea to like glue the Chinese American families here together. So, but we're not restricted to that. We also have many members. They like, some white people. They adopt the Chinese kids from China, and they also love to join us. And they were very nice, very open-minded. They want their kids to know their backgrounds and to learn their heritages, things like that. So they came to us asking for, you know, all this information. And we said, oh, yes, we do have this organization. If you guys are interested, you know, you're welcome to join us, things like that. We did some activities also, like every July 4th. There's a local activity called a picnic in the park, where there's a park just two blocks away from here. And this July 4th celebration, we C4 sponsored a stand there, selling some Chinese food, which, you know, most people associate us with, as well as doing some these local activities to promote ourselves, to let people know this organization exists in this town. So if you're interested, as long as you're interested in Chinese culture, it doesn't matter. You know, you don't have to be a Chinese American family to join us. So we're a very open organization for that purpose. Yeah.
Is there an email address or some contact?
Yes. The way we do this is that we don't have an official office here because we have a very low overhead. And we basically, we are all volunteers from the Chinese-American families here. Our families here are like, most are like middle class. We were mostly very well educated, and we basically all have our jobs and a pretty good career here too. And so we volunteer on the side to do these kind of things. So some kind of simple organization, also because of the overhead. So, for example, we don't have a very big structure. We have a president, and we have a committee which helps to form the idea and carry out these things, and a treasury. That's it. But it worked out well for years, and it's still working well. This year, I think that the president of C4 is the deputy curator here for this library. She's right next door.
Is she a Chinese man?
Yeah, she is. Very interesting, isn't it?
What is her name?
Caroline Nie. Nie. N-I-E, yeah.
Caroline, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what sort of trepidations would a family have, or what did you have coming to Concord?
What kind of help do the new immigrants need when they come here?
Well, I guess there are a lot of things, you know, almost everything are new. Okay, when by my experience, when I first came here, I didn't know because I was not grew up here, right? I don't know for example, the school system. And I throw my kids into the school system. I don't even know how they run, how they work, you know, things like that. But we know that Concord has a very good school system, a good reputation. That's almost the most important reason that we chose Concord to settle down there. And it worked out well. My kids, received good education and went to good schools, good colleges after this. So that's one example. The other thing is like the community life here. We had no idea also. I had no idea what kind of life I'm getting into. As the kids, grew up here, I learned through them about what the whole life is. Because I know most of our life based on through our career development here, our jobs contacts, all these are our professional friends. But not that aspect, like our kids go through. I think that's probably more real.
And becoming social beings with
others. Embracing the real life here, because that's a full-fledged of the life here. We came in as a professional, so we only know that part of the life. We don't know what the community life is, the kids, things like that. And of course, through 30 years now, I learn everything and blending well. You know. For example, I'd probably be more interested in casting my vote every year, right? Things like that. But some Americans don't do, as far as I know. So maybe too disappointed, whatever that is. But we feel we are part of this.
And you need to be...
We needed to completely exercise, our right and our responsibilities as well. So that's what the C4 is about. We want to use this as a way to contribute to this community, to let them know our presence as well as to contribute some of our cultural background to them, to improve the understanding between different people.
I wonder how it felt being a child, having the role of educating your parents about the community. They were the pioneers, I guess.
Well, yeah, in a way that through their lives here, we had a chance to participate deeper in this community and this society. Else, we'd probably be only on the professional level. For them, you know, through them, we know how, yeah, what kind of, you know, activity the school would have every year. You know, they have this, you know, annual parties, lawn parties, whatever. During some lawn parties, okay, in summer, they have this like a almost like a festival. And the kids go playing with that, and they throw ball at the target, so their teachers will fall into the water. That kind of thing, you know what I mean? Well, we don't have that kind of things back in Taiwan. You're not supposed to do that. It's kind of funny, right? Yeah. And they did all kinds of sports activities. There's a very abundant sports and social lives here. My kids learn to do almost anything. You know, throw at them. They ski. They skate. They, you know, swim. They, you know, they do, you know, baseball. They do soccer. You know. They do track, you know, anything. The chances they have here are unlimited. I think that's what America dream is about, right? They have their, you know, just their chances of being almost anybody they want to be.
That's the dream.
I guess that's the idea. You know, where we came from, we didn't have this much opportunity around us for many reasons, especially for my generation, because I was born in 1945 at the eve of the Second World War ending. So, and then post-war time, when I grew up, it was all pretty struggle, very tough time. You know, everything, we were raised in a very poor condition. But our kids, they have very different life. So that, you can say, you know, that's, they're blessed by that, this kind of opportunity provided here.
I'm very glad that that's worked out for them that way.
Indeed. My wife and me, we often talk to them and we say, you don't know how lucky you guys are, actually.
I wonder if people's feelings about Chinese are coming to another side of the spectrum now that China has become such a superpower and Americans are concerned about their own jobs and... Mm-hmm. You know, so much being made in China. Does that affect how the Chinese and Concord are viewed and perceived?
I don't know about that, okay, in terms of the Concord's viewpoint on this. But as a person with Chinese background, I can tell you my feeling about this. Okay, of course, the world moves on. No, everything is changing every day, so you can understand that. Now, the way I see that, yes, I think the Oriental system or the Chinese political system and American systems, they are basically, they are all compromising, trying to find a way to make their countries better. So, honestly, I don't think there's a communism system there at all. You go to China, you find it, it's way different. It's not something that we usually picture a communism country is about. And the so-called our capitalism system, whatever, if you call it that way. And we have a very good welfare system, things like that. Some are better than their system. So you're talking about socialism, practicing socialism here, maybe in some area better than them. And now 30 years ago, Chinese government realized the diehard typical communism won't work. They gave up on that. But without losing their face, they don't want to publicly deny it. But all their the way they're running their system is basically following the American system here. So a few years ago, you know, I brought my kids to China a lot through the years, especially like last 10 years, because they grow up, they can appreciate those things. My son, once we went to Shenzhen, which is a neighboring town from Hong Kong, very close. And we went there, and he looked at that. He says, "You call this communist country?" And it's very different. It's just like New York City or any big city in the United States. It's very different. But of course, they won't publicly denouncing it.
But in a sense, you went from being a very small minority here in Concord to representing a world majority, mm-hmm. you know, that
mm-hmm.
people have, I suppose, have a lot of feelings about it. And I wondered if they direct those feelings at you as a local citizen.
Not me personally, but I can see that, okay, actually, I would say it's almost none. But in terms of racial things, okay, profile, whatever that is, my kids mentioned to me also that they, like the daughter and my daughter, no, she said she was asked before once, I don't remember exactly, in Concord or in her college days in Washington, D.C. She was asked, "Where are you from?" And she looked at it and says, "What do you mean, where I'm from? I was born in New York." She sensed that people assume because you're looking, your appearance, you must be from outside. Must be from overseas, some other countries, because of your appearance, your race. There she catched a little glimpse of the racial issue. But to me, I think it's not really that bad. It's not a bad racial question, right, so to speak. It's just to say that she was assumed, not a citizen here, I guess. I think that's the implication. That's why she told me about that. And when they were very young, they asked, they didn't know anything about the real world, whatever that is. They thought, oh, everything was so idealized. But I told them, that's it. Admit it or not, okay, this society, this country tried very, very, their very best, and they did very well in many areas. Not to discriminating any race, any other people or whatever. But I said, in the society, there's still some existing there. People may not speak out, but some in their minds, it may take generations to eventually to move it away. But we know that because through the years I was here, I encountered many situations like that, or I heard you guys know Howard Cosell? You probably know Howard Cosell.
The commentator.
Sports commentator, very famous one. He misspoke something racial. He was immediately removed. He was probably one of the top sportscasters. Then his career basically ended that way. And many politicians, other things, in similar situations happened, just like that. That means we know as a country, as a society, we know what's the right direction to go. But again, these incidences keep happening. We know they're still in some people's minds. That's why they got punished when they speak out. But this is just the fact of life. You have to understand the background, the history of this country, and take so many generations to go away. Education, law, all these things can move the country in the right direction.
Listening to Chinese music.
I think the more we understand the differences between people, between race, between culture, then we are closer to the goal of being one, one people, one country.
So now there are around about 100 Chinese families in the Concord, West Concord mm-hmm. area.
Yeah.
Do you think that they are generally enjoying the same kind of transition that your family did, or do you think some of them are having a harder time?
I think their lives are easier. The new families here would be easier this way because our society does move forward quite a bit. 30 years ago, that was 1980. When I first came to the United States, that was 1969, when I stepped my feet on this land. I didn't quite realize that. It was only a few years before that we had that a black African American had their right to vote. That's in 1968, right? 1967 or 1968.
Well, that's when the Civil Rights Act was passed. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. That's what I mean. That they are really they get their equal rights, so to speak. Mm. Right. Yeah. So to speak, in terms of voting is concerned, right? Yeah, but I didn't realize that it was so close because over to Taiwan. Because of strong American media, whatever the things are, we were so much influenced by the Western culture. We thought it was so ideal. We didn't even see these things. We knew John Wayne. I knew John Wayne. I knew Andy Williams before I came to the United States. That surprised a lot of people here. But I didn't realize the African American, even at that time was, underprivileged. So that tell you this, you know how long we've been progressing since then. So now the families, I think they do a lot better. They enjoy better lives here.
Even than you did.
Yes. Yes. The society is more equal. Right? People are more equal. In a way. That's right. You may disagree.
I don't know.
We don't know. You made it sound like it was perfect for you.
Not perfect yet. I would say there are some, still hidden things, okay, like I said, it, maybe in people's minds. But overall speaking, it's much better than 40 years ago. That means we are moving forward. Are we there yet? I don't know. God knows. Right.
We're
working on
it. We're where we are.
that's very philosophical, yes.
Wherever it is, we are.
That's right. We're working on it, put it this way. Right. That's just my viewpoint on how our society has evolved, how it's progressed. Did I answer your question right?
Well, there was one part of your question I don't know if he answered.
Okay.
She was talking about many Americans feel that they have lost their...
Oh, okay.
Especially manufacturing jobs.
I see.
To the Chinese economy.
Every label says made in China.
I know what you mean by that.
Made in China.
Yeah,
so,
certainly.
So
yeah.
She's talking about what I would call a backlash. Of feeling where they're people don't understand this,
and yeah,
so
I understand.
They're frightened, and there are resentments that develop.
They're insecure. Yeah, exactly.
So, what does this feel like from your side?
Okay, that's a good question. Very good question. Yeah. Sorry, I just missed that. Anyway, okay, yeah, you know, personally, I don't feel they. You know, this this society dumped that feeling on us, okay, on people with Chinese background. I don't feel that way at all. And I knew that from, you know, watching evening news, which I did every day, that sometimes they interview these people who are in financial instability. They talked about the manufacturing industry moved out, outsourcing everything to China,
India,
anyway, all the developing countries, right? And of course, they have some bitter feeling about those things. But on the other hand, the report also reports the flip side of that, which is very interesting. After interview a lady who represents what we just talked about, and then the reporter asked her about what do you think about the Walmart prices? Okay, do you buy from Walmart? She said, yes, I do that every day. Okay, it's wonderful, whatever that is. But then the report reminded her that Walmart, merchandise in Walmart is from China. Then, so it's like,
so she said,
it'll come together, you see what I mean? if these manufacturers don't move out, then you won't have the Walmart merchandise at a low price. So it comes as a package. And on the other hand, I think it's not really a country does something bad to another country. It's not as simple as that. It's just the way that in this modern economy, everybody has to move forward. Every country has to move forward. Every industry has to move forward. Take GM as an example. They didn't move forward enough. They fell behind. Right? But when I came here to United States way back, Detroit is basically American logo.
Detroit.
They just owns the automobile industry. You don't even hear about it in Japanese cars at that time. But then in 70s, 80s, and they caught up. Now everybody knows the choice story. That's just the way it goes. But economy has its own law. It obeys its law. It has to go by that. This happened to every country. The problem we have here, we shouldn't complain about other countries. What we need to complain is to say why we didn't move forward enough. Because these countries who took over your place, they also go by that law. If they don't move forward, they get abandoned too. So it's nothing to do with any specific country or people or race, whatever.
It's the laws of economics.
Exactly.
You're saying.
Exactly. So that's, I don't know whether I answer your question in that regard. No. But emotionally, personally, I don't feel I get dumped on. But there were some cases, I don't know whether you guys know this or not, in 70s or 80s, when Japanese cars invaded this country and then started to take over many jobs here. Detroit automobile industry, auto workers lost jobs, massive layoff. There was a very, very famous case, a Chinese, I don't know whether he's an immigrant or he's just a Chinese American here in Detroit. He get killed by two white auto workers, ex auto workers, brutally with a baseball bat. I don't know whether you remember that. It was a very famous case. In Chinese community, we knew that particularly well because of this guy's background. They thought, okay, these two people, it's a father and son, white people. They met this guy in the bar. They didn't know each other. They just got laid off. They were upset. They picked on him outside of the bar, kill him with baseball bat. And they thought he was a Japanese American or whatever. So they turned their anger into him. That's of course many years ago, right? Nowadays, I haven't seen anything like that lately. But it happened before. I guess that's what your question came from, right?
You seem to have an amazing, positive attitude. That happened, but you're ready to move forward and...
I guess that's the right way to do it. The country is moving forward in the right direction. Sometimes it may not be as fast as some people think. Okay, a warning, all right. But I think it's the right direction. Personally, I still feel this country has the broadest mind to accept new people from... all over the world. We are an immigrant country, right, in a way. And we also, embrace new idea and welcome new people probably better than anybody else.
Should we do that more?
I guess it will. Okay, only thing that people need to know this is that when we run through hard time, like a bad economics, we shouldn't turn it into a personal issue or emotional issue, and say, because a lot of industries are outsourced to overseas. Therefore, you see them as enemies. It's nothing like that. It's the law of economics. So that probably, if we think this way, we can avoid a lot of personal issues. This happened to all countries, not only United States. Japan went through that also before. And Japan's still in trouble, big trouble. And Taiwan is recently, they are going through this bottleneck also. Taiwan, you probably know that, okay, a lot of industries, Taiwan's manufacturing industry, moved to China because of cheap labor there, bigger market. So Taiwan has to upgrade their industry to obey this economic law. Same as we are here. It's a different stages, but the law is the same. That's what we need to do, really, to focus on. What we can do to make ourselves indispensable. That's how I see it.
What could Concord do to make life even more pleasant and for immigrant groups coming in here to live and to make a new life here? What could this community do to make those people feel even more welcome?
Well, from my viewpoint, I think Concord has done already a lot. I said earlier that Concord is a conservative town in terms of commercial, that kind of things. Concord doesn't want McDonald's to come in, for example. We don't have a McDonald's here. When my kids were young, we need to go to Maynard in the next town for McDonald's. But other than that, Concord has a lot of conservative land, and they want to keep the same, the town in the same lifestyle for many years, but Concord, in terms of dealing with immigrants, other new people, I think Concord is, I have nothing to complain about. They are very nice. And every year we still have these things, many activities to introduce new foreign things. For example, we talk about a Chinese musical instrument. We had a concert also here, not in the children department, in the main lobby, for all adults open to the community here. Chinese music concert. A couple of years ago, we invited Ha Jing to come in. Ha Jing is a famous Chinese-American he's still teaching in BU, Boston University. He's a very famous writer.
Spelled?
Ha Jing. H-A. Ha Jing, J-I-N.
H-A.
Ha Jing. Jing spells J-I-N.
Ha Jing.
Yeah.
H-A-R-J-I-N.
H-A, that's his last name, Ha.
H-A.
Yeah. His first name is Jing, J-I-N.
J-I-N, okay.
Right. That's it. He won some, he won National Book Award, things like that. He had a very good reputation, and he, as a Chinese American, he also he wrote a lot of stories about our lives, so to speak. And Concord Library invited him over here to give a talk. It was full house also. People are interested. The white people, not just the Chinese American. So things like that, Concord did a lot. Has done a lot and is still doing that. We have, I think a year or so ago, we had a Chinese month, a full month of Chinese activities held here. You know, things like that. And thanks to our,
librarian?
Librarian, yes.
I'm going to have to slip out. I wanted you to talk to Carrie.
Sure.
About where Chinese people meet these days.
Mm-hmm.
Are there temples here now? Are there churches? What sort of gathering places are there where just Chinese people meet? And I'm going to thank you very much.
Thank you. Glad to talk to you.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I should take those off.
you can't go.
She thinks of everything.
It's a good helper.
No, she's more than a helper. Okay. I'm the helper.
Quite interesting.
Okay. Where do Chinese people get together?
Yeah, we get together. No, in fact, we have also a pretty tight community fiber here. We are, maybe due to the same cultural background or whatever thing, so we get together on individual basis as well as around the C4 that we talked about, the club we talked about, and
how many does that involve?
Okay, yeah. For example, in the C4, we have four. No, usually we hold four activities every year. Like Chinese New Year, we have a New Year Eve gathering. Okay, most of the time in some of volunteers' family, big house, somebody own a mansion, and we all went there. Okay, and so for that purpose, and also July 4th, I talked about it, we sponsor activity, and we got all these volunteers, and it's like a big party for us also. And the Chinese New Year celebration here in the library, and things like that, and what else is so do. So that's the activities around C4, okay. And in terms of a church, whatever, we have a church, a Christian church in by Route 2 there in Lexington. Okay, it's a quite big church on a hill. But I don't think we have many churches like that.
Like what? What is this one like?
That's a church for Christians. But I don't know what branch of it is, methodologies or whatever. I'm not into that. I don't know either. No.
But that's somehow Chinese?
It's for Chinese community. So most of the Chinese Christians go there.
And services are held?
Services held in Chinese languages by Chinese pastors, things like that.
In Mandarin?
In Mandarin and English. They have live translation there also. Because our younger generation, a lot of them don't speak good Chinese. It's kind of washed away. Even they're all exposed to some. Okay, during their grow up time, but
in school,
in the Chinese language school,
but not public.
They pick up. No, there's no public public community. The opportunities for them to speak more. Only in the language school, or in the family. Even in language school, they speak to each other in English. It's kind of funny. Sometimes we pick up a kid, how come you come to the Chinese language school and you still speak English? And, oh, yeah. So But it's like we are like isolated islands. Every family is an isolated island in terms of language against the whole society. It's a big ocean. You don't have many chances to win. That's how it goes. So church-wise, we know there are not that many, but we have a big church here, which basically services most of the Christians here. There's some small groups I heard, you know, Bible studies in people's home.
What about non-Christian faiths?
We have some Buddhism temples around here. I think one in probably in Woburn. Okay, but I'm not involved with that either. So I'm not that religious, so to speak. So I guess that's probably is everything I know about the religious needs here.
Do most families integrate and go to church with white people, or do they go to that Chinese church?
Some do go to the local community churches with white people, things like that, or you know whoever in local. I think majority of the Chinese Christians go to Chinese churches. Even it's further away from where they are. They drive longer.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's just the language, because the language they use there, it's easier to for the immigrants to follow, to identify with. You know. And the like I said, from the ministers to you know, all the church people, they're all Chinese, and they, you know, for example, you know, the minister, they sermon in Chinese language, mixed with Chinese culture. So everything we can identify with is easily that way. You talk about Chinese joke. That's right. So that's just, I think it's an identity issue.
Identity issue.
Mm-hmm. Basically, just whom you identify with, okay, nothing in bad sense, just from your cultural, your historic background, whatever, your custom, you know. Like my family, we still eat Chinese food most of the time in our family. You know, we subscribe to Boston Globe as well as Chinese newspaper.
Chinese newspaper from?
From local here, I think New York City. Yeah, so we subscribe that. We read two newspapers. Chinese paper report more Chinese news and also a cover, local news here too. So they have many pages.
Local news out of New York.
Exactly. Not New York local news in a way. We have one page of New York because the New York has a bigger Chinese population. We also one page for Boston. Okay, I think on the East Coast, I don't think there's other cities covered there, but also have a national news. I mean, national news here in America. What Obama said, you know, what Congress said, you know, that kind of things. Okay, and we have a few, several pages dedicated to what happened in Taiwan and what happened in China.
That's daily.
Daily. So we have a broader exposed to what happened in the world.
I'm sorry.
And the Boston Globe won't cover that much, no.
Of the world?
Of the world, no. Only when something really, really, really big happened in Taiwan, maybe says, "Ah, oh, they have a short article about these congressmen, you know, fight in the Congress." they throw rocks at each other, whatever. I mean, that's a big joke.
And your kids, did they read the Chinese newspaper too?
My daughter can do that, not as good as we do. My sons, they can't. They're lost in the wash.
Well, it sounds like there are quite a few people coming in who aren't speaking English yet. Is that correct?
Well, actually, let me put this way. In my understanding, the older generations, okay, maybe these generations, a couple of generations older than me, when they came to the United States, they came as a worker, a wetback. You know, they were mostly very little educated. But starting my generation, or maybe 10 years before me, we came to the United States well-educated. Usually our average education or our average income is better than the average people here.
So, are we talking Concord?
Concord or in United States, national standard.
So what's the story in Concord with the community now?
We all are, most of them, I would say, received at least a master degrees or PhDs. My wife is a PhD in EE.
And the new folks?
Hmm?
The new people?
Basically the same. We all have the same background. For a while, like my personal situation, I have to have a BS degree before I can get a license allowed to come to the United States to study abroad by our law. So, you know, we are already a screened bunch. So, you know, else there are people that from China, I know some, they came here just as a worker, whatever things are, okay, through different channels. And they are more like blue-collar people. Like people who's fixing my house right now. Okay, so that's two kind of backgrounds here. But for the middle class professionals, we are very well educated.
So is there a need for classes, English as a second language?
Actually, not for us. Not for my education background.
No, not, okay.
No, but for the people who came as a blue-collar workers, yes, they need. Some have very little language training. So as a result, they can only work within the Chinese community for a living. They can only communicate in Chinese with their Chinese customers. So that's why they get stuck there.
And the least education you have, the harder it is to learn a new language, oftentimes, to be back in school.
Absolutely. You're not used to school. Absolutely. And for our background, because we all learn, my situation, we learn 6 years of English in middle school and junior high. And then in college, some of our textbooks are all in English. So we somehow, through this, we prepared, we are better prepared for this country, you know, being here. But without going through this, it's tough.
Do people have the programs that they need here in Concord?
I haven't heard anything about that, that this kind of like English as a second language.